While it's not type 1 diabetes, thank God, we have been keeping a diagnosis with my daughter in the dark for about a year and a half now. And I'm going to share a piece of that story today. We spent a day in the hospital and learned some interesting things watching the medical staff, watching my daughter go through something. And if you stick around to the end, I do want to also give you my favorite framework for safely experimenting with blood sugars as somebody living with type 1 diabetes as well. So this one's pretty heavy, kind of packed full, and also hopeful. I hope you take away from this what is most helpful for you. Now, if you don't know who I am, my name is Matt Van de Vecht. I'm a certified master fitness trainer and nutritionist. I live with type 1 diabetes. Thankfully, my daughter does not yet, hopefully ever. And in today's episode, we're going to dive into a bit more of motivational side before getting into the tactical side on how you can make blood sugars a little easier to manage. Hope you enjoy.
I've spent the last 10 years pushing the limits while identifying trends and patterns in my type 1 diabetes management. Follow along as I learn, apply, and share the fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle strategies that I've learned from diabetes experts around the world. The real question is, how can we live fearlessly with diabetes while maintaining stable blood sugars? This podcast is here to give you the answer. My name is Matt Van de Vecht, head coach and co-founder of FTF Warrior, and welcome to Part of My Pancreas.
So as I mentioned, we did spend a day in the hospital with my daughter. Now, this day was planned. We intended on going to the hospital. And what's interesting is this is something we've been dealing with for about a year and a half now. See, my daughter is 2.5-ish. And when she was 6 months old, something happened that we didn't really share. And it's not because I wanted to hide it, but I just didn't see any reason to share about it on the internet. So today it makes sense, though, to actually bring this to light. And we have some happy news as well alongside this. But at 6 months old, my daughter was diagnosed with FPIES. And if you don't know what that is, I'm trying to remember the exact phrasing behind it. You know, I'll just pull it up. It is food protein-induced enterocolitis syndrome. And basically, it means it's a rare form of food allergy that affects the GI tract. And I didn't know what that was, but my wife, being an occupational therapist for pediatrics, was familiar with it. And so, thankfully, she knew generally about it when we introduced or were introduced to our first symptom, which was my daughter throwing up in her sleep. I pause because I'm remembering these moments, you know, seeing it on the video camera that we have in a room where there's just a pile of vomit next to a sleeping infant. And we're like freaking out a little bit, you know, and it was quite the experience seeing paramedics hold your infant and having a fire truck and an ambulance outside your house at 10 o'clock at night, you know, as new parents. And this is just one of the challenges that we faced with health related things. It was tough. And since then, we've learned a lot about FPIES, learning about you just stay away from certain foods and she should be fine. And then at 2 years old, you come back in and you intentionally give her the things that originally had nearly put her in the hospital. And we're going to, in a safe environment, we're going to test to see if she's still severely allergic to these things. So it's like, oh, this is going to be a tough day, you know? And so we head into the hospital, it's all planned out. We bring in bags of foods that we know have previously put her in a nearly catatonic state. Like, you know, when she was an infant, she was having a hard time maintaining consciousness. She was vomiting. It was a mess. And so going into this experience, we were prepared for that, but hopeful for the best, right? And had been very strict on not allowing her to have those specific foods since the original incident. And during the day, here's where I want to break down today's lesson. During the day, we start off by hooking her up to an IV, right? And she has to get an IV put in her hand. And we had prepped her on this beforehand, kind of talked her through it so she knew what to expect. I showed her my insulin pump sights and I was like, look, daddy has needles too. You know, trying to show her like, they're just going to plug it in like I plug in my my insulin pump. And it's going to hurt a little bit, but it's going to be okay. And of course, when it went in, it was difficult, you know, holding her down and letting her get the IV put in. And she didn't know what to do with her arm because they plugged an IV into her hand and then put kind of like a cast over it to make sure she wasn't pulling on it or yanking on it, right? So her hand was immobilized for the duration of the day. And initially, it was really difficult for her. You know, she was trying to like fumble and use a bar for a hand, essentially, to pick things up and kind of navigate the world. And not even halfway through the day, she had completely adapted. It was beautiful, but also really sad at the same time, where she figured out how to operate with just one working hand. So she was feeding herself with one hand, kind of putting the bowl between her legs. She was able to play with her toys with just one hand. She was picking stuff up and, you know, pinning it against her shoulder and able to use all these creative ideas on how to adapt to her new reality, right? And she had no idea that this is a temporary thing. She's like, well, as far as I know, this hand no longer works, you know? And it was beautiful, but also sad, because I've seen this across a lot of pediatrics where children get these life-changing diagnoses that they're not able to revert back to. At the end of the day, my daughter's IV came out. She got her hand back fully functional and was like, yay, you know, and she got a sticker and she's stoked about the sticker. But there are so many people who have a life-altering event and that's it. You learn to adapt or die, right? And that's the reality. And for so many of us with diabetes, that was the reality we were given. Adapt or die. Figure out how to manage your blood sugars, or that's the end. And I first wanted to acknowledge that for all of us, that you know, you watching or listening this have adapted. And it's a beautiful thing that we as humans were created with this power to adapt to whatever life throws our way, right? No matter circumstances are, we're able to pivot and adapt and figure things out. But with type 1 diabetes, this is one of those things that doesn't get reversed. It's not a temporary roadblock. It's something that you have to continually get up and fight every single day. And it's a beautiful battle, but it's a battle nonetheless. And it's taught me a lot about myself, about you know, how strong I can be. Didn't know this. Probably taught you some things about yourself as well. Led me down a path where I ended up studying exercise, physiology, nutrition, blood sugars, hormones, like things that I never would have studied otherwise. I was going towards sports medicine in college and took a complete turn when I got diagnosed. No, it was many years later. But this this journey that we're all on, we've adapted, and it may not feel like it all the time, but you are conquering this thing. That's a big deal. And I wanted to draw some attention to that. If you haven't done it yet today, if you haven't done it in a while, because I know I haven't, I want you to give yourself a pat on the back and just acknowledge the efforts that you put in. Because while we may have adapted, it takes a lot to continue to push forward. Now, that being said, there's lesson number one is just me really telling you to acknowledge the journey you've been on. But for more practical thoughts, adaptation, while it may be a superpower, isn't always used for good. And what I mean by that is sometimes we adapt for the worse. See, obviously my daughter had adapted in the midst of her circumstances to operate with one hand, and she was fine. She did great. But we with diabetes, I've seen this oftentimes, will adapt to survive, but we adapt in the wrong direction. So we'll be told by our doctors, and this is one of the most dangerous phrases I've ever come across, it is what it is, or that's just how it is. That's just the way diabetes is, right? And we adapt to get used to things. And another word for this would be complacency, right? But we might not know it because we might not know what is possible. And this is why surrounding yourself with the right people is critical for your continued success, right? We get people who come into our programs and they're at 30, 40, 50% time in range. And they're like, I'm doing pretty good. And I'm like, I don't want to be the one to tell you this, but if this is a report card, you're failing, right? Like 50%, that's an F. It gets so much better. And as you get more controlled, life gets better. So look at all of our clients hitting 80s and 90s and 100% time in range relatively consistently. And then they get introduced to that environment. And they're like, oh my gosh, you guys are hitting 100% days, weeks, and some clients months, which I haven't even done. That's wild. But when you're surrounded by the right environment, you adapt in the right direction, right? But in the wrong environment where maybe your medical team is telling you, oh, you're doing good enough, right? Yeah, that's just how it is. There's going to be ups and downs. My answer to that is, well, how good could it get, right? And asking that question, getting curious about how I can adapt forward and not adapt backwards. A lot of times we're told, you know, you have to be low carb, adapt to the low carb lifestyle or keto or whatever restrictive diet you've been told. Sometimes it's vegan, carnivore, whatever. There's 15 different diets out there for diabetics. Everybody says theirs is the best one. I'll give you a hint. None of them are the best one for diabetics because all of us have different needs, different responses, different sensitivities, like my daughter, right? And to tie up that story as well, at the end of the day, we had introduced an enormous amount of the food that she was previously severely allergic to, and she passed with flying colors. Now, my wife and I kind of had a feeling that's how it was going to go, but there were still some underlying nerves, some trauma associated with seeing our daughter in a very lethargic state when she was an infant. And it's thrilling to see that this is something that we get to move past. We still have one more test, so we got one more type of food that we got to check off the list to make sure that she's okay. But to actually be able to have her go to her grandparents' house and not have restricted menu items, you know, and she gets to eat the same foods as her cousins now. And, oh, my goodness. But now I think about it like that, you know, eat the same foods as XYZ. Diabetics, right? We're told, oh, you can't eat that. Ooh, that phrase is just borderline triggering, right? Oh, you can't eat that. Or we tell it to ourselves, oh, I shouldn't eat that. Ugh, why not, right? And it's because we've adapted. We've been told, oh, this is just what you expect, right? Carbs are the enemy, or you know, that type of food, fill in the blank, whatever you've been told, some myths about diabetes and what you can and can't do. It's not about what you can and can't do. It needs to be about how can I, right? How can I have pizza and stay in range the whole time? How can I compete in triathlons and stay in range the whole time, right? There's possibility behind this, but we have to make sure we are adapting in the right direction. So make sure that you're not adapting via restriction and saying, oh, this is just how it is, I have to adapt. It's more about how I get to adapt, right? And that language shift has served me really well in my life. It's not I have to take insulin. It's I get to take insulin. It's not I have to go for a run. It's I get to go for a run. Even though I hate running, if I shift the language behind it, it dramatically changes how I feel about it and the overall circumstances. Now, one thing I wanted to mention before I forget is, you know, as I mentioned, all of us have adapted to living with type 1, right? We're overcoming this disease just by surviving day to day, and it's no longer a death sentence, which is really cool. You know, I'm glad that I get to continue living and thriving with type 1 diabetes. But remember, there's always things going on behind the scenes for everyone that you meet. For example, for me, we didn't tell anybody about this diagnosis outside of our friends and family who needed to know. You know, hey, don't feed my daughter that kind of food. Things might not go well, right? And you probably didn't know about that about myself. Similarly, we haven't told anybody about two other recent diagnoses that are pretty serious, and well, more serious than my daughter's diagnosis. And you know, those are burdens that I carry. You know, my family has been hit a couple times by some pretty serious stuff, but I'm sure that there's stuff going on in your life as well. And so I think it's important that we take that into consideration in our interactions with others, right? We expect other people to not offend us as diabetics living with an invisible illness when they say, oh, should you eat that? Give them the best of intentions, or give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they have the best of intentions. Maybe they're just looking out for you. And if not, well, still be nice. But the rest of today's thought, with the environment that you surround yourself in, right? My daughter, obviously she had a condition, has had, I don't know, we're on the borderline there, but we didn't let that slow her down, right? We still looked for ways to challenge herself to continue growing, and she's done an amazing job. Thankfully, there were no developmental issues. It was just a GI tract thing. But the environment you surround yourself with will help you or hurt you. It's going to do one or the other. It's going to help you move closer towards your goals or move further away from your goals. So the environment you surround yourself with becomes critical for different areas of life. Now, most people don't have a lot of type 1 diabetic friends, right? I do, but that's because it's pretty much my entire life. I live with it, I study it, I work with a lot of people who have type 1, and of course, I have a lot of you as my friends around the world who are just listening and commenting and sharing stuff. But if you don't have anybody around you with type 1, then your only influence is your medical team, who's probably influenced by their patients, who are likely not as on top of it as you are, right? They're probably bordering on complacent. So your doctor sees you and goes, hey, you're doing pretty good. Keep up the good work. And you're like, I could probably do better, but maybe he's right. Maybe I should just adapt. And maybe she's not challenging me because I am doing okay. Now, the reality is you could do better. And I say that because the reality is also that I could do better, right? We can all do better always. This is why in our Renegade Warriors newsletter, we always talk about CANI, C-A-N-I. Talk about it in our Warriors Tribe too. It stands for constant and never-ending improvement. And that's the goal, right? It's not that we should be at the finish line tomorrow, but I should be a step further tomorrow than I was today. Constant and never-ending improvement. By the way, if you want to get around people who are leveling up and who are going to challenge you to become a better version of yourself, you gotta grab the Renegade Warriors newsletter. This is where every month I sit down, spend like 10 to 15 hours compiling all the information from the month that I've learned, from research, from my clients, from my own experiments. I plug them all into a type 1 diabetic magazine and I ship it out to your doorstep. So definitely recommend grabbing that if you're looking for that constant and never-ending improvement piece. You can go to renegadenewsletter.com. Just go there right now real quick. Pause this. Come back to it. First one's on me. So go grab it. I want you to experience that. See if it's something that you find helpful, and we'll get it out to you. So renegadenewsletter.com. Now, the last lesson for today that I wanted to tie things up with is looking at my favorite way to safely experiment with blood sugars. And I say safely as a bold print, if you're reading this, right? Safely is really important because I've experimented recklessly a few times as well, and things didn't go very well. Shocker, right? Experimenting with medication, it doesn't go well. So it's important to find safe ways to experiment. But what they did in the hospital for my daughter, they gave us very strict parameters. You know, show up this many hours fasted, none of this type of medication the day before. She has to have these types of foods and these specific measurements ready and available at this specific time of day. So at the hospital, they would take the food that we brought, measure out exactly how much you needed to have, and then tested in isolation to where the type of foods that she had previously been allergic to, they made sure that was the only thing that she ate. Why? Because they needed to know that if there was a reaction, it wasn't because she was sick and throwing up from sickness. It wasn't because there was rancid food, you know, something went bad. It wasn't because of a new allergy. It would only be because of the food we gave her. So we tested in isolation. So one of my favorite things to do with blood sugars is exactly that, to test in isolation. So if I want to know, well, this is on my desk, so water, I guess. What's water going to do to my blood sugars? Well, I can test in isolation adding water and test in isolation subtracting water, right? So what happens when I'm super hydrated? What happens when I'm super dehydrated? And I can test those in successive days. Now, the issue with diabetes, and this is what makes it extra difficult, is that there are a lot of variables. There's a lot of things that impact blood sugars, right? In fact, we've compiled a list of over 50 variables that can cause blood sugars to go up or down or all around. And if you don't know exactly what you're doing or exactly what to look for, you might test for water and think it's in isolation, but behind the scenes, there might be other stuff going on. Maybe you have insulin on board that you forgot about and that screwed up the test results. Maybe you didn't know that going for a walk with your dogs is going to cause blood sugars to go a little wonky and that threw off your results. Maybe you didn't know that stress causes blood sugars to go a little crazy, or lack of sleep, or dawn phenomenon, or, right? There's all these different pieces. So testing in isolation, critical, but your first couple of tests might have some muddy results, right? And it's not because you suck at testing, it's because you're ignorant. It's just because you don't know yet. But the more you test, the more data you grab, the more patterns you're aware of. You know, on day one, I might drink water and see blood sugars come down. I'm like, oh, cool. That's interesting that water makes my blood sugars go down. And then day two, I drink water and blood sugars go up. Well, shoot, now I have inconsistent data. Now I need to zoom out and go, okay, what else was at play? What else did I do on day one that I didn't do on day two, or vice versa, right? So testing in isolation repeatedly you know, or long enough time horizon gives us cleaner data. So it's kind of like we'll use water as a continued example. If you have muddy test results because you've got so many variables at play, the more times you run that isolated experiment, the more times you're pouring water over the test results, so to speak, and you're lessening the mud, right? So the first couple times you're on the test, it's pure mud. You cannot see through it. No idea why blood sugars are doing what they're doing. And that's where most of us started out, right? But as you continue running those isolated experiments where you're testing, what happens when I drink more water? What happens when I drink more water? What happens when I drink more water? You're essentially pouring water over that muddy test result. And over time, it becomes more and more clear, oh, this is what was happening, right? Now I know insulin on board threw off the first set of results. Now I know my stressful work meeting threw off the third set of results. Now I know the sleepless night that I had with my toddler on the fifth night is what threw off day six's results. And it starts to make more sense. I know, obviously, you can do this on your own. This isn't medical advice. Talk with your doctor first and all that jazz. But that's the route that I took initially. Just testing in isolation. I'd move one variable at a time and I would test everything that I could think of and just write everything down. It's where the Trending Health Journal came from, which if you don't have one of those yet, you can go to trendinghealthjournal.com. It's a whole type 1 diabetes journal for figuring out this kind of stuff. But that's what my process was initially, was just testing everything as close as I could to isolation and just obsessively searching for patterns. Now, like I said earlier, that did land me in the hospital a few times. It's a little bit dangerous and sketchy, but over time, the results do become more clear. It took me about 2 years of daily experimentation, which I know it sounds like a lot. It was. I was not mentally well when I was going through that period of time. It was very difficult, but that's one way to do it. Another way to do it is also to learn from people who've done it before, right? And this is, again, why we have that Renegade Warriors newsletter, because every month I take what I'm currently experimenting with, and right now a lot of my attention is going to exercise since I'm training for a half Ironman, my first one. It's a 70.3 mile race that I have in 5 days. Ooh, so that'll be fun. But a lot of my current research is exercise. There's certainly a dietary component as well, different types of foods, how do those impact blood sugars, recovery, and then just kind of everyday, day-to-day blood sugar management. But all of those get compiled into that monthly newsletter for me to show people what's to be focused on this month, right? It's a little bit overwhelming if I show you everything all at once. Not everyone can handle that, and those that can end up working with me personally to get things more customized for them, and there's certainly a space for that if that's something you're looking for. But first, I would recommend getting around the right people and getting the right information, and both of those can be found in the Renegade Warriors newsletter. So every month, we're actually just about to ship out next month. I spent probably 15 hours in this one. I am so excited about it. New research, new algorithms for the pumps, new way of managing blood sugars, a whole totally new perspective called the 3 levels of impact. Oh my gosh. So you can go grab it. Like I said, renegadenewsletter.com. Highly recommend it. As a recap for today, you've been through a lot. Give yourself a pat on the back. You deserve it. Everyone's been through a lot. Be kind. Right? Everyone's got their own stuff they're going through, and they probably don't show it all on the surface. Another one is I want you to really just take some time to think about if you're adapting forward or adapting backwards, right? We all adapt one way or another. We were created this way, and it's amazing that we can adapt to literally just about anything, but are you adapting in a way that moves you towards your goals, or are you adapting in a way that moves you away from your goals? And for most of us, our goal with diabetes is to live more normal, to have high quality of life, peace of mind. So make sure you're adapting towards that side of the spectrum, right? And that certainly is helpful if you're around the right type of people who are going to encourage you to move toward that goal. And then lastly is looking at how can we level up with the right information. And one of the best pieces that I've found to do that is to test in isolation, because there's a lot of blood sugar variables, and the more you can sift through the weed and water down that muddy data, the better chances you're going to have at truly identifying the root cause of the spikes, the drops, what works, what doesn't. And if you look like that, or if you're looking for information like that around the right types of people, go check out the Renegade Warriors newsletter. It's one of my favorite resources we put out. You can go to renegadenewsletter.com. And I also shared in there about how I've now, I think, I got to double check on this, but I believe this is the last month I needed to check off my calendar to hit 5 consecutive years above 90% time in range for my blood sugars. And that's becoming a parent, running a business, training for triathlons, all of the fun stuff using what I teach in that newsletter. So I'm excited about that. I'm going to go celebrate as soon as I can double check and confirm that. But I hope this one was helpful for you. If you found it helpful in any capacity, we'd love to see you share it with somebody else who you think might find it beneficial. And of course, I'd love to see you in the newsletter community as well. So thanks for hanging out. Be sure to check out the next episode and keep up the fight.